baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Hello and welcome to the walk-off, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the most badass co-host in the biz, Adam Mack, ready to go to war here in 15th century England. Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
All right,
buddy. Big show ahead of us here. We're not going to waste too much time. I did want to really quickly say follow us at Walk Off Podcast on Twitter, the Walk Off Podcast on Instagram. The link for the Discord is in the notes. Now, we love all of you Patreon folks. We're going to show some love to you and read the list of names here at the end of the show. It's just as our Patreon continues to bulk up, we still want to show appreciation, but it's going to take like a few minutes now to get to it all. So just a heads up there.
All right. You ready? We're a minute in. Should we talk ball?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay. Really quickly before we tease what's going on the show here, I know that just yesterday morning we released our interview with Jolly Olive of John Boy Media. And that was an awesome chat, man, to sit down and talk with him. He obviously is a big Mets fan, but came in very prepared to talk Jays. And it was kind of cool to see kind of like that outside perspective of the Toronto Blue Jays as a team.
Very cool.
So that's on our full conversations pull down on YouTube right now. You can check that out, of course, on the audio side, wherever you get your podcast. We are also going to be sitting down with Julia Cruz, Blue Jays reporter for MLB.com on Monday. So you can kind of keep your eye out for that one Monday afternoon, maybe Tuesday morning. We'll see how it goes there. All right. 2 days off for this Blue Jays team, and two very needed days off as this wild card race continues to heat up with the Guardians coming to town, so we'll get into that. Alek Manoah's workload, it is becoming a problem. And what is the solution? We'll figure it out. We're going to use our math skills here.
Dear God.
George Springer can't stay on the field, but the perception that he's underperforming while healthy is wrong, so we'll set that record straight. Orioles, Blue Jays, buddy, this rivalry has existed for decades, but we kind of forgot about it as Jays fans while the Orioles have stunk the last few years. Well, I think it is back up and going, so we'll talk Orioles, Blue Jays rivalry. We'll check in on some of the top World Series contenders, how they're playing lately. Justin Verlander is having a Cy Young contention season. So we're going to look into his contract and what it could mean next year come the offseason and free agency. Field of Dreams game was last night. We'll close the show talking that game, how cool it is, and the experience in general. Wild card pandemonium here for this Toronto Blue Jays team, eh, bud?
Yeah, those 2 days off... I didn't enjoy either of them. The one was the rain out.
Yes.
So that was a day off you couldn't even really brace for. You just kind of looked forward to ball all day. And then at the last minute, the rug was pulled out. And then scheduled day off yesterday. Oh, I don't know if it's just the Rougned Odor of it all, but like these Orioles are really starting to bug me. Because they donated like 11 wins to the Yankees at the start of the year before deciding to be a real team. I don't know, but it's frustrating.
No, it is frustrating. And I mean, you look at the standings and it is tight, man. So let's start with this Cleveland Guardians team that is coming into Toronto here. They have been really good this season and even better lately. So since coming out of the All-Star break, they have surpassed the Minnesota Twins. They've taken over first place in the AL Central. They hold a game and a half lead over the Twins. They have a top five farm system. The young team on the field is performing. The veterans like Jose Ramirez putting up superstar numbers. I mean, Andre Jimenez, dude, he's Second base for this Guardians team. He was an all-star. He has been unreal. Miles Straw and Steven Kwan have come out of what feels like nowhere to be steady producers on this team. The Guardians hit. They get on base. They're good on the base path. They don't make mistakes. Their defense is excellent, although by no means is this offensive engine of the Guardians driven by power, but they have pop, right? Both Canadians, Josh Naylor, is putting up big power numbers. Jose Ramirez doing what he does. Their starting pitching has been incredible. Tristan McKenzie, Canadian Cal Quantrill. Of course, the top of that starting rotation, Shane Bieber. All of them have ERAs right a little over three right now. Like, this team is for real, man. And they're coming into Toronto hot.
Five-game winning streak. Seven of their last 10. Yeah.
And this is the worst part, man. If you look at the standings, the Blue Jays have no breathing room. There is not room here for this team to go on any sort of a skid. Like, they hold the top spot in the wild card, but they're only a half a game ahead of Seattle. They're one game ahead of the Rays. They're one and a half games ahead of Baltimore. Minnesota's only two games back at Toronto. Like, this expanded playoffs that MLB put into effect in the new CBA here in the offseason. I remember even in May talking to you about, I don't think it's working. It feels like there's just have teams and have not teams. Well, my God, this middle glob is really becoming a problem and a thorn in this Toronto Blue Jays side. And I don't know what to make of it, man. Pretty much other than this team needs to win. They need to put up some W's here.
Yeah, I mean, need wins. I just want to address the fact that I think expanded playoffs, again, are great. I think this is good for baseball. I think you have a lot more fan bases that are in on baseball right now. And I think this is going to continue over the next 2 months. Like, I think just looking at the AL, I mean, the NL is a little bit more of a shit show on the bottom half. But in the AL, other than like Oakland, Detroit, the Royals, the Angels, and the Rangers, like even Boston could rattle off a 10-game winning streak and be right back in the thick of things.
That is my nightmare. Like, please, enough. Right? We don't need another team in the thick of things.
No,
but you're absolutely right, man. Like, by no means is Boston out of this thing. There's 50 games left. And basically how this is going to play out is the team that doesn't have a losing skid is probably going to be the teams that come out of this. And that said, though, this Toronto Blue Jays team has been so streaky, going 9-3 or 2-8. You know, it's one or the other. It's feast or famine. And I sure hope it's feast over the next 7 weeks, dude.
Like, yeah, I mean, look, I just want to, like, comparing back to last year, we had one fewer playoff spot, right? There was two wild cards, and there was, I mean, by the end, it was the three teams. Obviously, the Jays, the Yankees, and the Red Sox going for those two spots, Jays being the odd team out. But even, like, all of September, the Mariners were in it until, like, the last week. Right, but that
they
was about it.
Last day also.
You had four teams going for the last two spots, whereas now you've got six going for the last three spots. Right, so I think that's an improvement. That's two extra fan bases that are going to be engaged in baseball late in the year, and I think that's great for the sport.
I mean, you're nailing it on the head here. We're sitting August 12th. And if you look back on last year, at August 12th, there were fan bases that were just like, season's over.
Yeah.
I mean, there are this year too, but it is definitely substantially shrunk.
Yep, big time.
The fan bases that are just like, it's not even worth watching baseball anymore. So, great on MLB. I sure wish the Jays had separated themselves a little bit more at this point. But here we are.
Well, I mean, one thing working against the Jays here over the next 7 weeks, as you said, is the division we play in, where when it comes to load management of guys like George Springer, Alejandro Kirk, Vladdy, Alec Manoah, these guys, we're not really going to be able to afford to take many days off. Like, I was looking at the schedule I mean, we had a meat grinder in April.
Yeah.
Guess what the next 7 weeks are? Because now that the Orioles are good, that was supposed; those are supposed to be our rest days, right?
Yeah, those are supposed to be gimmies, and they are not.
So we got a stretch here from August 26th until September 4th. That's the Angels, the Cubs, and the Pirates for 9 games. Other than that, it's like Tampa Bay, New York, Baltimore. We got a lot of divisional games coming up, so.
And I think these divisional games are going to decide whether this team is a contending team or they are not. And I think you really touched on the workload part of it. It's going to be a big deal. The workload part of it is going to be a big deal, especially with the guy I'm thinking of here is Alek Manoah. We touched on it off the top here, and we are going to get into it. But Alek Manoah is already surpassed his total, like the most amount of innings he's ever pitched in a season. We brought this up in June, dude. We were talking about could there be an innings crunch on Manoah with the way he's pitching and how deep he's going into the game and how fast he's accumulating innings. And it was all speculative at the point at the time, right? But now here we are. We're in a part of the season where this Blue Jays management is probably going to need to manage Alek Manoah's innings going forward. So let's start with taking a look at his innings as a professional. We'll look at his minor league innings. We'll look at last year's innings, and we'll take a look at where he is right now.
All right. So if we look back to 2019, that is his draft year. He pitched 108 innings at West Virginia and then 17 in Vancouver for 125 innings pitched that year. Before that, at West Virginia, he pitched like 50 and 80 innings, okay? 2020, so we're good.
No, I was just going to say, so 125 innings in 2019 is the most innings he's ever pitched.
So then in 2020, well, that was the COVID season, that was a lost season, right? There wasn't really official stats. I know he pitched, but it wasn't tracked. I doubt it was 200 innings in the COVID season. Last year, he pitched 18 innings in AA and 111 innings at the major league level. So 129 was the total innings pitched last year. And this year, he's already at 137.
And one thing to keep in mind, too, and there's no actual science to this. Well, there is. I shouldn't say that. Obviously, the sports medicine science behind this goes... There's whole teams and a whole division within this organization of people who are solely concentrating on sports science. That's what the high performance department's all about. That said, normally they don't like to increase a pitcher's innings by more than 30%. So if you go 130 innings, 30% of that is going to be about 40 innings. So 129 and 40 is 169 is kind of the amount you want to increase. He's already 30 innings away from that.
And Jays have 52 games left, right? So that's big 10 game. More starts, right? That's if he's pitching one starts. Every five, that's 10 more starts. Even
he's been averaging 6 innings an outing.
Even if you say you only put him out for five, that's 50 extra innings. And that's very conservative.
Yes.
Never mind the fact that we're going to hopefully need him for a handful of starts come October.
How do you manage this then? That like this is going to really take some creativity.
I just got an idea. Here's what we do. We trade for a starting pitcher. Can we do that? Is it too late for that?
I mean, even Max Castillo, you look at Max Castillo, you're like, boy, we could probably use him now. So the options are this. It's try to skip a start or two down the stretch. Okay. Or you can throw in a 6th starter to give an extra day's rest here and there. Most likely they're going to start pulling him earlier in games, not letting him go into the 6th, 7th, 8th inning. Stripling's returning, and that's big. That's going to give a little bit of breathing room to this starting rotation because they're up against the wall right now. Mitch White can float between bullpen and and the starting rotation to give a little bit of length, unless Kikuchi runs out of rope and is no longer making starts. Like, man, there's a lot of variables here in play that this management team is going to need to try and fiddle with. I mean, I guess if you look down at AAA, depth is a weakness. Bowden Francis, right? Everyone will remember we got him in the Rowdy Tellez trade last year that brought Trevor Richards into the bullpen. Bowden Francis, in his last 20 innings, has looked really good. A 2.66 ERA, a FIP of 2.08, a 36% K rate, and a 5% walk rate. Those numbers look great. He has struggled in AAA up until just recently, but he has had three really good starts in a row. Maybe you can roll the dice and throw in a Bowden Francis. Again, none of these options are very desirable for a team that is in the thick of a wild card race like this Toronto Blue Jays team is.
We should be getting Nate Pearson back soon, though, right? We'll just hang our hat on that. That's man, I'm like... I'm like beyond worried about this. This is, like you said, we talked about this in June, as kind of a, hope we still have Alek Manoah on the second half. And, it's bad. Like, can we look at the splits here pre and post All-Star break? Because,
yes,
I mean, you mentioned in terms of workload management, not seeing him pitch into the sixth, seventh, eighth innings. Since the All-Star break, he hasn't pitched past the sixth. There's been blowout games where he's been pulled in the sixth. There's been close games where he's been pulled in the sixth. I don't think we see him pitch past the sixth the rest of the year, regardless of the circumstances. Before the All-Star break, he had pitched 114 innings, which was a new career high at the major league level. He had an ERA of 2.28 and a WHIP of 0.95. Very impressive numbers.
Yes.
Since the All-Star break, in four starts, 4.03 for an ERA.
Yeah.
And a WHIP of 1.34.
He hasn't looked himself. I don't think he looks gassed, but he doesn't look himself.
If the strategy of workload management involves a different approach at the plate, that is going to be a factor, right? Like, how much stank he's putting on every fastball if he's got to, you know, give it an 85% effort instead of a 95% effort, right? Like, there's not a lot of room for error. I'm like big time worried about this with Alek Manoah. I mean, it's a 4-game sample size, so it's not like a big sample size, but if the next two starts are not vintage Manoah, I'm going to start panicking, Scott. Please talk me out for this.
I can't agree more with you, man. I wish I could talk you off the ledge. I'm right there with you, dude.
How many weeks did we spend this summer saying, well, when the playoffs get here, as long as we have Manoah pitching like Manoah's pitching and Gossman's, you know, being the good version of Gossman, and then roll the dice with Berríos, right? Mm-hmm. But it's like, if we're getting a 4+ ERA from Manoah in an October series against the Yankees, what are we doing here, right? Like, we need the best version of Manoah, not the fatigued workload management version of Manoah. If this team's going to be a number one wild card team and a threat in the playoffs, right? So
if they are going to be a threat at all, Manoah.
We've really painted ourselves into a corner here with whatever is going to be going on with Manoah. I'm very concerned. I'm very concerned. I wish I wasn't.
If there's any silver lining, that Kevin Gausman seems to have gone the opposite way.
Yes.
Of Manoah. He has been the best he's been all season long since coming out of the All-Star break. His four starts have been absolutely mind-blowing in his approach, the depth he goes into the game, the fact that we are in, as they like to call it, the dog days of summer. So we're watching Manoah go one way and Gausman go the other. But this is another thing to keep in mind, is that, like Adam touched on it, big league innings matter. So yes, Alek Manoah last year pitched 129 innings, and we can hang our hat on that. However, he only pitched 114 big league innings, and he's only pitched 114 big league innings ever up until this season. So you can look at his college days and go, oh, well, he's hit 130 innings before, but there is a mega difference between college ball and the stresses and the pressure on Alek Manoah right now as the head of
the
starting rotation.
I mean, look, up until the All-Star break, there was a lot of narrative out there that Alek Manoah was our game one pitcher in the playoffs, right? Yes. I don't think that's the case anymore.
Well, I know Jolly Olive brought that up when we were talking to him on Wednesday, and
he had some good points about just like
he did
with the pressure of playoff baseball and everything. Even if he wasn't struggling right now, and even if he doesn't, even bounces back and dominates over the next 7 weeks, there is definitely an argument to be made, as Jack said, to like just let this kid not start the opening game of a playoff series. I do
really
agree
well.
With that.
He said, let him go in there in game two and let him eat, is what he said.
I just want to highlight Kevin Gausman's number, though, so we're not total doom and gloom here. You said he has gone the other way. So if we date this back for the last month, so going back to June 21st, he's had 8 starts. He has an ERA of 2.42 and a whip of 1.18. Very good numbers for Kevin Gausman. Mm-hmm. So that's a positive.
Stripling's on the IL still. He is pitching to live hitters today. They're going to reevaluate tomorrow and see how he's feeling. There may be a rehab assignment ahead before we see him back in this rotation. I know that there's a question mark for Sunday's game against the Guardians. We don't know who is starting yet. This starting rotation, man, it's worrisome.
How do you feel about Jose Berríos? What is your confidence level on that? Because, I mean, beyond that, obviously, Kikuchi is Kikuchi, right? And then the bullpen combined effort on the fifth day is whatever it's going to be. But, like, Jose Berríos, do you feel good? What are your thoughts on him?
You know what? I'm less concerned about Jose Berríos than maybe a lot of people are. I don't know. I have no real reason to not be panicking about him other than just feel like he's a 28-year-old who has been here before. He's gone through these struggles before. He's had up and down seasons. He's normally incredibly consistent. His splits are really weird. You look at how good he's been at home, like literally as dominant as Manoah or Gausman at home. And then has had these big blow-up games. You look at the averages, and you're good for about 72% of the time to get a quality start out of Jose Berríos. And then, it's the other 28% of the time you need to worry about.
Okay,
it is concerning, but I'm not panicking at all.
The home
I really do
away
think Berríos
splits are so drastic that it's kind of like
worth bringing up. Yeah,
it's worth bringing up. For whatever reason, like the home away thing is like a real factor and a bigger factor for some pro athletes than others. And it's not just baseball. Again, I'm a big football guy. I've watched Drew Brees dominate in New Orleans and struggle on the road. Same with Ben Roethlisberger, my guy in Pittsburgh. Jose Berríos, here's his numbers. He's played 11 games at home, 11 games on the road. On the road, he has an ERA of 7.5. That's ugly. At home, he has an ERA of 3.23. And if you take off that first start of the year where he pitched for a third of an inning, his ERA at home in the other 10 games is like 2.6.
Yeah. He's been dominant at home.
I did some digging into the numbers, and he has so 22 games this season, six starts in which he went less than five innings, 16 starts in which he went more than five innings. Take a guess at what his ERA is in the six games in which he pitched under five complete innings.
9. 17.8.
Okay. That's how bad he's been when he's bad. But when he's good, when he's pitching five innings or more 16 times, like you said, 75% of the time, roughly, right? ERA, 2.96.
Wow.
Like, that's...
it's insane. It is absolutely insane, especially when you look at his ERA next to Kikuchi and you're like, they're the same pitcher. And we touched on this last episode of the podcast, right? Where we were like, it is so unfair to put them in the same group despite their numbers looking the same.
Yeah.
Because Berríos is a really good pitcher 75% of the time.
Yeah.
Now, what the hell is going on the other 25%? Fuck if I know. Like, holy shit, it makes no sense.
Yeah. Yeah, Kikuchi's more of like a... I feel like even saying 50-50 is generous. I feel like it's more like a 40-60% of the time.
And even his good starts
aren't that are
five innings and he gives up two runs.
Yeah.
And the whole time you're like pulling on your collar going, yeah.
Look, here's where I sit on the Jose Berríos thing. Come playoff time, right? He's pitching game three against the Yankees. This kind of a scenario. Do I think Jose Berríos can steal a game against the Yankees, right? We talk about it in hockey all the time, having a goalie that can steal a game, stands on his head. You didn't deserve to win, but you win 1-0 because he just was unreal, untouchable. I don't think Jose Berríos can do that for us. I mean, like, sure, 5% chance he does, but I don't think so. But do I think he can give us a game where he doesn't fucking wreck us? Yeah, I think that's probably attainable for Jose Berríos, that he comes in and doesn't get blown up against the Yankees and we have a shot to win come the 7th, 8th inning.
Can Jose Berríos go in for 6 innings, allow 2 to 3 runs, and come out in the 7th letting Yimi García, Anthony Bass, and Jordan Romano close things out? Yeah, he can. Now, this is the thing with this team. They're going to need to score if they have any chance of progressing in the playoffs.
But that's a given anyways.
Can Jose Berríos just, you know, give us some bulk and only allow 3 runs? Yes, he can.
This team is going to live or die on the bats of Vladdy and Georgie and Kirky and Bo Bichette. Like, we're going to need to hit anyways. It's just a matter of... does the starting pitcher spot the other team a 4-run lead in the first 2 innings and we lose 8-7 anyways, right? I don't know. I'm still optimistic if we can get there, but I'm worried about Alek Manoah. So, and I wish I wasn't.
Speaking of load management, and I know you brought up George Springer and how much his bat is going to play into where this team winds up being come October. I did want to touch on him really quickly here because there is a lot of frustration surrounding George Springer with the portion of the fan base. Obviously, it's been frustrating is probably the best word for when you look at his health and his lack of ability to stay on the field, and it's been super annoying as a fan to watch this management team need to really kind of handle him with kid gloves. It's been frustrating for the team, I'm sure. It's even more so frustrating for George Springer himself. But there's been this, like, weird spin out there on Springer. Some folks have kind of let his struggles to stay healthy kind of cloud their perception of what this guy has done for the team. So just so everyone knows, when playing, George Springer has been crucial to this team's success. So, since being acquired in the 2021 offseason, George Springer has played 167 games. Not nearly enough, just over one season. However, those games, and a lot of those games, by the way, have been DHing or while he's laboring and playing through an injury. But he's put up 40 home runs, 99 RBIs, 118 runs, 14 stolen bases, a 850 OPS, wins above replacement of almost 4.9. This Toronto Blue Jays team is 97 and 70 when Springer's in the lineup. They're 54 and 51 without him. He's the best leadoff man in the game. And when he's in this lineup, he helps this team win. So I just wanted to bring that up. I know there's so much frustration about how little he's playing, and that is completely fine. I'm sure he's feeling it too. But to kind of like give this perception that even when he's in the lineup, he's not doing enough, that's false. That is not the right narrative to be floating out there.
Yeah, I mean, you summed it up perfectly. I've got
nothing to add there.
It is weird that there is a perception that he's not contributing enough even when he's there. It's got to just be like a...
We get it in the comments all the time, right? We'll see comments where it's time to get rid of Springer, time to cut loose on Springer. It's like, well, number one, that's not happening. He's under contract for another 4 years, yeah, and they're not moving him. Like, he's their guy.
If they're anything, they're just moving him to right field.
Which I think 100% is going to happen. I think we will see a new full-time center fielder, depending on how they do it next year, whether it's Merrifield, more likely they go out and figure something out there. But, yeah.
George is very good.
Yep. Okay, I did want to talk this Orioles rivalry, because I read an article in The Athletic about it that was kind of... it was a cool read. I know it's behind a paywall, so not everyone can check it out. But if you do have The Athletic and you didn't get a chance to read the article, I would suggest checking it out. And it just kind of brings up how everyone focuses on the Red Sox and Yankees when it comes to rivalries in the AL East. But just how chocked full of rivalries that AL East truly is. And that Baltimore and Toronto is a truly underrated rivalry that has existed for decades. And I know this most recent group of fans will remember the 2016 season and all of the head-to-head rivals Batista had. I mean, there were a pile of them. You can't even say Darren O'Day's name nowadays without Blue Jays fans being like, oh, fuck him, right? Like, Darren O'Day at the top of that hated list. Roughneck Odor now on this Baltimore Orioles team, of course. Jays fans didn't like him from back in the Texas Rangers days. Also a rivalry with Jose Bautista. It's funny how many of those Bautista had throughout his career. But you look at what's going on right now with this fan base in Baltimore. They've gone through a long rebuild where the Orioles were just darn right terrible. And now that they're a good team, they're getting more vocal. And boy, oh boy, things are heating up. We watched it firsthand, the two games the Jays played against the Orioles here just a few days ago. And man, it's fun. This is going to be a fun next few years. I don't really think that we needed another contending team in the AL East, but here we are. I guess it's good for baseball, right?
I guess so. Can't wait for that balanced schedule next year.
Right? No, I can't agree more, man. Like, less games against the Orioles and Rays. Yes, please.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Did you have anything to add on the Orioles and Jays rivalry?
Nah, fuck them.
Yeah, right?
I mean,
I did want to really quickly... So there was an Orioles fan that... Let me see if I can find this really quick here. So there was an Orioles fan that tweeted the Moneyball meme that everyone loves to tweet out, right? Yeah. And it's got Billy Bean sitting, well, what's his name now?
I can't think. Jonah Serra? No.
Yeah, Jonah Serra. Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill. Thank you.
So Jonah Hill's at the whiteboard and he's pointing it out. Anyways, it goes, Billy, this is Roughneck Odor. He has an 841 OPS in high leverage situation. His defect is he's useless in literally every other situation, which is funny.
Very funny.
made me laugh. But then I literally burst out laughing at one of the comments. Okay. I know I sent this to you, but it was on Twitter. Yeah. And one of the comments was, does it count against you if you created the high leverage situation? And it's just like a very funny little poke at Odor's lack of defense.
Well, I,
ability to.
In that Jays-Orioles series there, there was the moment where he just airmailed one to first base, and then in the next inning hit like a two-run home run to take the lead. So yeah, that
take
is
the lead. Yeah, exactly.
Funny.
Okay, World Series contenders. There's a few of them out there. We're gonna check in on some of them just to see how teams are doing. The Los Angeles Dodgers is where we'll start. Okay. They have been unbelievable the last 37 games. So we'll start with LA. They're 32-5. 32-5 in their last 37 games. Like, the Padres are making all of these deals at the deadline, and LA doesn't care. They just keep winning. Like, it doesn't even make sense. There's only two teams that have ever done a better record in the last century, in the last 100 years. There's two teams who have had better records than the Dodgers in the last 37 games, and that's the 2017 Cleveland Indians, Guardians. Now, obviously, in the 1977 Kansas City Royals, both of them went 33-4, so they won one more game. LA has 32 wins since June 29th. Washington has 37 wins all season long. Dodgers continuing to be the World Series favorite. Now we'll look at the Padres. We did talk about the big trade deadline they made. Adam, how are the Padres looking?
5-5 in their last 10. 63-51 on the season. They got spanked by the Dodgers in a 3-game series.
Yep. And they went in their roster fully bolstered after that deadline, and the Dodgers did not care. The New York Mets also leading that NL East division, and they have been, if not other than the Dodgers, they've been the best team in Major League Baseball. Where are they sitting, Adam?
73-39 right now. 6-game winning streak and 8-2 in their last 10. Run differential of plus 127. Very nice.
Wow. And as if the Mets aren't already good enough, Jacob DeGrom back from injury. And his first game back, of course, I think he had a perfect game going into the sixth. Like, just doesn't skip a beat. The guy is not even human when he's pitching. It's wild. The Cardinals. Do you have the Cardinals up by chance?
Yeah, Cardinals are 61-50, 8-2 in their last 10. So they have passed the Milwaukee Brewers now. The Milwaukee Brewers are not in free fall mode, but they are. You could tell that team was impacted by the trading away of Josh Hader at the trade deadline.
Yeah, that was a hit for sure.
An emotional one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, American League, we'll go to the Yankees. The Yankees have been struggling. The Yankees have played Houston twice, the Mets twice, Seattle 3 times, St. Louis 3 times, Seattle 3 times since the All-Star break. They are 2-11 in those games.
2-8 in their last 10. 2-game losing streak. Are they catchable?
I mean, I want to say they're what, 9 games up on?
They're 10 right games now? Up on the Blue Jays right now.
So they're 10 games up on the Blue Jays. I would say no, they're not. I'm more worried about the schlog of teams only 0.5 to 2 games back of the Jays for that top wild card than I am about catching the Yankees. The Astros probably also uncatchable in that AL West. How are they?
Yeah, looking? Astros are 72-41. They're 5-5 in their last 10.
Okay. And last but not least, the Minnesota Twins, who just got knocked out of the lead in that AL Central by the Guardians.
So Minnesota Twins are on a 3-game losing skid, 57-53. They are, 1.5 game back of the Cleveland Guardians, who on the back of a 5-game winning streak are now 59-52.
It reminds me of the comment we got, I forget, a Twins lifer or something on Twitter about the call that was, you know, reversed so that the Jays
the Merrifield call at home,
the at home play, yep. Right? And he was all upset, and it just stands out in my mind. One of the things he said, which was, if the Twins don't win this division, they have no shot at a wild card. And what an interesting little quagmire that AL Central has found themselves in. I mean, they are all still in it for a wild card, but truly, you want to win that division because that is much more attainable than probably the wild card.
Well, I mean, if Baltimore was in the AL Central, they'd be a half game back of the division.
So wild.
So.
And they wouldn't have had to play. They wouldn't have had to play New York, Tampa, and Toronto exactly. So much. So they'd probably even be winning it.
Yeah.
Okay. Things are heating up. Only 50 games left. It's going to be a wild end of the season. Looking forward to it. So we're going to move on to Justin Verlander before we wrap things up here. I did want to touch on the man, the legend, future Hall of Famer. He, of course, just went through Tommy John recovery. Got signed by the Houston Astros in the offseason to that two-year deal with a player opt-out if he hits 115 innings. That's already happened, right, Adam? He could opt out right now?
Yeah.
What are his numbers looking like? Because he's right now in Cy Young contention. He's putting out just an incredible season for a 39-year-old off Tommy John surgery.
Yeah, he is. Where did it go now? So, 39 years old. We've got an ERA of 1.85. 136 innings pitched, so he's already reached his op out. FIP of 2.92, WHIP of 0.86.
Jesus, he does not give up hits and does not walk batters. Unreal.
Yeah.
He very well could win the Cy Young. Like, he very well could win the Cy Young. In your opinion, he opts out, right?
I mean, unless, yeah, I guess.
Even to just re-sign with Houston, you opt out and take more money, right?
I mean, yeah, I guess. Like, I don't know. Unless the Astros win it all and he just wants to
right
run it back again. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's it feels like the even for a 1 year offer next year, you could probably get 26, 27 million pretty easily. I'm sure if you reopen the market for bids.
I mean, how do you, as Justin Verlander, look at what Max Scherzer did last offseason and not go and try and do the exact same thing?
Yeah, it's a great point.
I'm really interested in this. This is actually one of those little nuggets, if you will, that has really piqued my interest, and I'm really excited to see what happens with the Justin Verlander sweepstakes in the offseason, because at 40 years old, my big question is, will he get term? Like, are there teams out there that might give him a 2 or 3 year deal at 40 years old, coming off maybe a Cy Young award?
So that's maybe where, like, the real incentive lies in him opting out, is maybe the annual average value goes down a bit, but he gets 2 years, right? Like, maybe it's a $40 million 2 year deal instead of a $25 million left on this one. I don't know.
Or do you look at Max Scherzer's contract, say, I'm 2 years older than him, and I just had a much better season than he did. I want to be the highest paid baseball player in MLB before I quit. You know, like, can he force somebody's hand and sign a 1 year, $40 million deal? Probably.
I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of teams who would go for it. A lot of teams that are fall just short this year are going to be like, yeah, we could add Justin Verlander. You know, if they think they're close and they're a big budget team, why not?
I'd be into Toronto signing him for 1 year, $40 million. Go for it.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll end on the biggest gimmick in baseball, but also I love it, and it's super romantic, and everything about it is pretty darn cool, which is the Field of Dreams game that happened yesterday. MLB does a really good job of this, man.
Yep.
Watching it last night, there were moments that just had my skin crawling a little bit. Like when the Griffies came out of the corn and then played catch together, senior and junior. That was pretty darn cool.
Can I be a...
be a Debbie Downer.
You know, I love being a Debbie Downer. When they came out of the corn, okay, Ken and Ken Griffey, junior and senior, they both played for the Reds, right? Which is why they were involved in this particular game. Ken Senior comes out, and I've got it up on the screen share here, just so everybody can see. They come out of the corn. Senior's wearing a bright red Cincinnati Reds shirt. Okay, obviously it's got the Nike logo on it. But Ken Griffey Jr. is wearing his like Swingman branded t-shirt. Like he's not wearing Cincinnati Reds gear.
Yeah.
And that just really rubs me the wrong way. I don't know what it is that really upsets me. Like he's entitled to have merch that he wants to sell and build his brand, but also like just fucking put on a Reds shirt for this 5 minute little thing here. Did that not bug you at all? That like,
No, it did. It actually stood out to me too. It's funny that this is what you're bringing up. I wouldn't have even thought to bring it up, but like
from like a visual standpoint, it would have been so much cooler to see each of them just wearing their Cincinnati Red jerseys. Like they both say fucking Griffey on the back. Like it just would have been that extra next level of nostalgia and whatever. And instead we get the kid in a pretty generic gray t-shirt with the big Swingman logo on the front. I don't know. It rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know if it was his decision or what happened. I don't want to speculate on that. I just thought it was dumb.
There were lots of parts about this game that weren't great, but for the most part, it was pretty well done. I mean, the truth is, it couldn't have been between two shittier teams. As iconic as the Reds and the Cubs are, it was just bad baseball. But very romantic, very cool. By the way, before we close this up, what do you say? Do you say, let's have a catch? Or do you say, let's play catch?
Oh, let's play catch.
Let's play catch, right?
But then again, I also say, if you build it, they will come. So what the fuck do I know, really?
Right, exactly. All right, everybody. We're going to end on a big thank you to our Patreon. Obviously, we really appreciate all of you who support the channel, whether it is through Patreon or whether it's just watching right till the end and hitting the like button, whether you subscribe, whether you just drop a comment. It's all very much appreciated, and without you folks, this walk-off community would not continue to grow like it does, so we really do appreciate it. You can join the Discord. The link is in the show notes. Always having new members add. Join there. We're pushing 200 at this point. Rabid Blue Jays fans always talking baseball. And then, of course, you can join our social media at Walk-Off Podcast on Twitter, the Walk-Off Podcast on Instagram. Adam's got the names and the tip of the hat for all the Patreon folks.
Patreon.com/The Walk-Off Podcast. We've got David, Abraham, Michael, Sarah, John, Simon, Rashid, Joshua, Jeremy, Ian, Dunedin, Bob, John, Wyatt, and Patrick. $4 a month. Support us there if you choose. If not, a like is always loved. A comment is even better. On the Patreon, we do have movie reviews. We have early access to our interviews. We have this Jose Barrios jersey behind me is being given away. So the contest for that, if you're on our Patreon, just send us a DM on Patreon and let us know why you want the Jose Barrios jersey. It is a men's extra large, by the way. We have 5 entries for that so far. So if you are already on the Patreon, might as well just send me a DM and let me know why you want it and get in on that contest. 5% of all of our Patreon dollars we are donating as well. Giving back to, I think it's Jay's Care Foundation we're doing this year?
Yeah, doing the Jay's Care Foundation, absolutely.
There you go. Okay.
And then last but not least, just thought we should mention that we are talking to Julia Cruz on Monday of MLB.com. She's the Blue Jays reporter with MLB.com. And you can also check out Jolly Olive from John Boy Media. That interview is up right now as we speak. Thanks again, everybody. We'll see you for Long Toss on Sunday. All the best.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to picture. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.